folk trio Lula Wiles.
Is this land yours? Is this land mine? The fault lines crack and the fists they fly. In the heat of the night, I touch the falling sky.
The three members of Lula Wiles met as girls at Maine Fiddle Camp and then reconnected at Berklee College of Music. Now they are taking the folk world by storm, touring the country and promoting their second album, What Will We Do? Today on the show, Molly Obomsawin, Ellie Buckland, and Issa Burke, the group Lula Wiles. NPR says the trio is giving folk music a new reputation. We'll hear their story and some of their music next on Maine Calling. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, you are in for a treat. In the studio with me, the folk trio Lula Wiles. They are on fire, and they are from Maine. The members of the band are Issa Burke, Eleanor Buckland, and Molly Obomsawin. They are in the studio with me, and in a little bit, I will ask them to play some songs off their new record, What Will We Do? But first, as always, we want to hear from you. Are you familiar with Lula Wiles? Do you follow folk music? Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And if you are online, you can watch us on Facebook Live. Welcome to all of you. Hi, everybody. Welcome to all of you. I love your all story. And I know, Eleanor, you and Molly, you've known each other a long time.
It's true.
Yes.
Since we were really young kids. We met in swimming lessons in Farmington.
At the UMF.
Yeah.
Health and Fitness Center.
The Health and Fitness Center at the college swimming lessons. We got to level 5 and then we both quit. But I think we met there, and our moms are both nurses, so they work together at the hospital and in Farmington. So
yeah, and our dads are both musicians, and they also
would
run in the same
together.
Circles. Yes.
So you guys are both from Farmington, and Issa, you're also from Maine, but not Farmington.
Yes, that's right. I'm from South Berwick, Maine.
How did you meet the other two?
So I met Ellie and Molly at Maine Fiddle Camp. When we were young teens, I probably met Ellie when we were maybe 12 and 13.
I think so.
And Molly a couple of years after that. That was how we got started. They were like my summer camp friends for a bunch of years. Ellie and I were in the same, we were always in the same fiddle workshops at camp.
So at that time, when you were young teenagers, were you all dreaming of a career in music, or were you just going to fiddle camp because that's what you did?
A little of both for me.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I mean, both my parents are professional musicians, so it was always a really accessible idea to me that I would, you know, become a musician. It was, for me, it was just kind of like, I might take up the family business or I might do something else. But I always loved music, and the older I got and the more I got deeper and deeper into music, it just became kind of the only thing I wanted to do.
When was the first time you all sang together? It sort of got that your voices sort of made magic.
There are a couple of, or two instances that I think of, they're both pretty special moments. So one was our first performance ever as the three of us plus one other person who didn't end up becoming part of Lula Wiles. So sorry, Lena, we love you, you know. But anyway, so the three of us plus one other gal at folk music at fiddle camp performed one song during the sort of variety hour at the end of the night at fiddle camp.
Our band name was Hot Lime, because when you're 15 years old, you make a band with the first letters of your first names.
Yes,
and you try to build a word out of it. And so creative.
Yeah, the three of us plus a girl named Lena. So we were Hot Lime. And you kind of had to say it that way, too. The band name was like,
Hot Lime. Yeah.
So we performed Fall on My Knees, which is a traditional song. And so that was the first time we performed together. And so basically, I think rehearsing for that was, I guess, first time we sang together. Just the three of us. But there's also, like, at a fiddle camp, there is and in a lot of other folk music communities all over the country, it's like there's a lot of the culture of singing a lot of songs together with lots of people, right? And so we'd all sort of participated in that. But then the other moment that I think of is really late at night, Issa and I think we were like 16 or 17. It was right mm-hmm. before I went to Berkeley, so I would have been a senior. It was the summer after my senior year. She and I were kind of like really late in the staying up and jamming songs. And it was the first time we'd ever sung songs together, right? Sort of been like, oh, here's a Gillian Welch song, or, you know, a contemporary folk song or an old one. And let's harmonize, let's sing and harmonize together. Because before that moment, we'd only ever really been fiddle jam, like we just jammed on fiddle tunes with just our instruments. So that was a special moment of, whoa, it feels great to sing together.
Yeah.
And then we roped Molly in. But
yeah. All right. Go ahead, Molly.
Oh, no, I had nothing to say.
Oh, okay. So the band name is Lula Wiles. Yes. I understand that folks who follow country and folk music may get it, but others may not. So explain your name.
Yeah, so our first band name was The Wiles when we decided to be a band, sort of after Wiley-ness, sort of Wiley Coyote or feminine Wiles. And we thought that that embodied our sort of character as a trio.
Yeah.
And then it came to our attention that there was another band named The Wiles, so we had to so sad, but we had to come up with something else. And Issa's dad actually ended up coming up with the reference, but we were like, we really want to keep Wiles. And he thought of the Carter family song Lula Walls, which is a traditional song about an aggravating beauty named Lula Walls, who is a wily woman who won't marry the narrator of the song. When he asks her to marry him, she just says nothing and leaves him hanging forever. And we decided we would go with that a little while.
We liked her vibe.
That's wonderful. You all have your second record out. It came out in January. You are, and I thank you so much for being here, because I know you have been on a grueling tour.
Yes,
just
we have.
Back in Maine. Tell me about the tour, though. I saw you've been to Atlanta, you've been to Chattanooga, you've been to Maryland and Washington, and where am I leaving out?
Manitoba.
We were in the Midwest quite a bit. You know, we played, in the past 3 months, we've played Chicago and Minneapolis twice, and lots of places. It's hard to remember and just sort of go through our whole tour schedule in our minds as we're thinking about
it's all a blur.
Yeah.
But we have been touring with drums, which is maybe an update that people might not be aware of.
Yeah.
Today on the radio, we're trio, but tonight in Farmington, we'll be playing at the North Church with drums, and the rest of the weekend we'll be with drums. And that's sort of an exciting thing. So we've been, you know, expanding our touring radius out of the Northeast and playing more rock clubs, because we have drums now and we can call ourselves folk rock, and that's really exciting.
Is that I didn't know that was the definition, the difference between folk and folk rock.
Not
is it
really.
Drum?
Maybe not, but it helps.
I strongly, and all of us, I think, just kind of strongly object to, like, genre labels in general, because it's so, I don't know, they can be so limiting, but I think, you know, one of the things that could turn a folk band into a folk rock band could be the addition of a drum set.
And maybe an electric guitar, which, Issa will be playing today and forevermore.
Yep. Indeed.
Yeah.
So tell us about the title of your new album and what it means. I mean, go.
Go ahead, Issa.
So the album is called What Will We Do? And there is also a song on the album called What Will We Do, which is obviously where the title of the album comes from. And it's a traditional ballad that comes from Ireland. The original singer of the song was named Mary Delaney. And it's a song that I brought to the band. I'd heard a few different people sing it. The Foghorn String Band does a great version of it. And I remember our friend Eamon O'Leary teaching it at a music camp that we all teach at. And so I just heard the song pop up in various places over the years, and I'd always really loved it. And then I I brought the song to the band, and I kind of had it in the back of my mind that What Will We Do would be a great album title.
I love this, too, because you didn't tell us
that. I didn't tell
that.
Them that I wanted it to be the title of the album, and then, like, we all kind of came to it eventually without me being like, I want us to sing this song so that we can call our album What Will We Do.
I remember you suggesting, like, bringing the song to the band, and then during the recording process, I do actually remember you suggesting, oh, we could call it What Will We Do. And we were like, oh, okay, you know, maybe. And then as we sort of kept recording and thinking about the songs, that fit so well.
And but I was
then,
like, yes.
Exactly. But then only like a month ago or something, you said like, well, I always wanted it to be the title.
Yeah.
But ultimately.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, I think I was reading more into it.
No, there is. Exactly. Right. Yeah. There, ultimately, it's sort of the thesis statement of our album. And obviously, we recorded it and wrote the songs in the last few years, which have been a politically tumultuous few years for the country.
And also a
and
personally tumultuous few years for all of us in our early 20s.
True. But so it's sort of the question that we were asking ourselves as artists, as citizens of the world. Mm-hmm.
As women,
as Native person. Mm-hmm. What will we do? We'll make an album that sort of tries to start discussions about things that we think people are not discussing, either because the topics are really volatile or because they're really hard to talk about. You know, political divisions, the opioid crisis, colonialism. There's a lot to talk about. And we sort of, as artists, we can't have the whole conversation, but we can try to start it. And I think we did.
Yeah.
And I think the song What Will We Do and the question What Will We Do just to me seem to like really kind of tie together all the different threads of the album. And exactly the way that Molly's talking about it, sort of like the thing that brings all these different songs together. That's sort of where the album title came from.
One of the reviewers I read this morning said that you all aren't really about being combative as much as empathetic. Would you agree with that?
That's a nice thing to say.
I hope so. I think that with this record, there's sort of press and just the conversation around it of sort of the concept of it being somehow provocative to be writing folk music or you know, be in our 20s and be writing music about stuff that's, as heavy as the history of colonialism and genocide in this country or addiction and not just kind of like love songs. And we, that might actually be from one of our favorite interviews we did. But just the idea that we're not trying to write songs that just would like stir the pot for the sake of stirring the pot or to provoke something just for the sake of it, but really, like, again, how Molly said, of just starting the conversation, right? And so the questioning of it rather than saying, this is my opinion and I'm going to fight you on it, but trying to,
this is my experience and these are my thoughts about the things that I see in the world and the things that I've experienced in my life. And we feel like, in some ways, like, particularly Molly's perspective as a Native person, are all of our perspectives growing up in rural Maine, you know, a lot of the things that we're trying to represent are things that are often overlooked.
Yeah. So I would say that our goal is to be empathetic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I understand the first song you're going to sing for us has a little bit something to do with Maine.
Yeah, sure does.
Yes.
Just a little something.
Oh, sure, Bob.
Yeah.
So this is called Hometown. Who wants to tell me about it while the rest of you all get set up?
I'll talk about it.
This is Eleanor.
Yeah. So I am the primary writer on the song. Issa and Molly and my sister kind of came in like in the ninth inning to help me finish up the song. But I was really compelled to write a song about the complexities of what it is to live in rural Maine. And I think that pretty much many people in this country, I think, will be able to relate to the ideas in this song because I think in a lot of ways, living in a rural place in rural America is, I'm sure, very similar, but I can only speak to Maine. You know, there's a reference, all you Mainers listening, you'll get the reference, the Uncle Henry's reference, which we play it all over the country and nobody gets that except Maine and New Hampshire. For me, it was like about the complexities of growing up, whether you're growing up with money or without money or being liberal or conservative in Maine and yeah, just the complexities of rural life and like how that fits into also the political climate of the current moment.
Well, we can't wait to hear it. That was Eleanor Buckland. You heard talking about this song, Hometown. Also, Issa Burke on guitar and Molly Obomsawin on bass. Big stand-up bass in our studio. If you can watch this on Facebook Live, it is terrific. Go ahead. Wow, thank you. Lula Wiles, we're going to have more music when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Black Cow Burgers and Fries, a cocktail bar and soda fountain on Exchange Street in Portland with dine-in or takeout service, blackcowburgers.com. And the Lunder Foundation, in support of the Colby College Museum of Art, always free and open to all.
I'm Elizabeth Blair with NPR's Arts Desk. The word anthem has a lot of different meanings for a lot of different people. And in our American Anthem series, we've been asking people across the country what their anthem is and why. For some, anthems are a symbol of hope. For others, they're a protest. And for some, an anthem is just something they can let loose to. Since you've been gone, since you've been gone. But mostly, anthems capture the spirit of a community. At NPR, we do that by bringing you all the latest political news, along with the local news and arts coverage that define home for you. We work every day to be your anthem, so sing it back to us. Become a member now.
Our Let's Grow Together membership campaign starts Tuesday, May 7th, but you can contribute right now at mainpublic.org or by calling 1-800-866-1475.
The crisis in Venezuela has led to critical food and medicine shortages. It's forced millions to flee the country.
It's not a war, but for many it was impossible to do anything because there's no money.
Many have ended up in neighboring Colombia, which now has its first refugee camp. That story and reaction from William Barr's testimony this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. Special treat today, Lula Wiles.
I'm pounding the pavement, waiting on a stationary letter from the Nashville man. It's the waiting that I'm running from as fast as I can. And when I'm breathing too hard to think, well, that's how I like it. 9 to 5, running for my thoughts before I take on the night shift. I'm getting ready for the bed. Gentleman who bought it's real nice, but I don't want to hold it. I'm pounding the pavement, waiting on a stationary letter from a Nashville man. It's the waiting that I'm running from as fast as I can. Come on. And sweet deals. No messages, no packages, no postcards telling me how he feels. And what could be better than the Tennessee weather and a man alone? How about the two of us together? We can talk without a letter or a telephone. I'm pounding the pavement, waiting on a stationary letter from a Nashville man. It's the waiting that I'm running from as fast as I can.
Molly Obomsawin, Issa Burke, and Eleanor Buckland. Their new record, What Will We Do? We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We are streaming today's show on Facebook Live. We're going to start with Grady calling from Portland. Hi, Grady. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Hello.
Hey, I just wanted to say, big fan of Lula Wiles. I was at the Maine Fiddle Camp with them way back in the day.
Oh, my God!
Wait!
Wait!
Wait, I probably shouldn't say your last name on the radio.
Hey, Grady.
Hi, Grady.
Oh, I tell him. the public can know.
Oh my God, great to hear from you.
Yeah, how's it going?
I don't really have a comment other than
hey, dude.
Grady, thanks so much for calling in. And so what were these guys like back at fiddle camp?
Oh my God. Oh, no.
I think he hung up. He's not going to reveal any secrets today.
Whatever,
maybe
dude.
He can call back. We'll go to Jane, who is calling from Farmington. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Hello.
This is Jane.
Hi,
and
Jane.
I'm calling from the Farmington Historical Society.
Yes.
And we are so excited you are going to be at the North Church tonight.
We're thrilled. We can't wait.
Plenty of people coming.
That's great.
And just to tell the listeners, at 6 o'clock, we have a pie social, homemade pie social with a performance at 7. And if there's any pie left over, the ladies get to take it home.
Yeah.
Heck
so
yeah.
Don't eat all the pie.
Yeah.
Jane, thanks so much for calling in and reminding everybody about the performance tonight. Are there tickets left? Is there space?
There are tickets left.
Mm-hmm. Let's fill the place. It'll be a hometown show for Molly and I, so we're really thrilled to be coming up tonight.
Well, Jane, thanks so much for calling. Okay, you guys have been on this big national tour. Any pie socials at any other venues?
No, I think
venues?
This is the only one.
Yeah, this is the only pie social, so take note, the rest of North America.
This is what rock and roll really is.
Yeah, totally.
From the Main Calling Facebook page, is it Reiner says, greetings from Germany.
Yes.
You have a fan in Germany watching
today. Hi, Reiner. Right, we miss you. And say hello to Illet as well.
So Reiner is, he booked, he's a music promoter and booking agent in Germany, and he booked us a wonderful tour of Germany and one show in Austria at the end of 2017. We had a great time.
A month long of Glühwein and German.
Which is... German mulled wine. We had a lot of mulled wine, a lot of local beer. It was a good time.
And many potatoes.
Yes.
So talk about that though. In Europe, what Americana, folk music, whatever you want to call it. How do people take it? What's the response?
It's kind of funny. Oh my gosh. So I say this with the utmost respect and love. I think American music is all sort of lumped into one concept, in especially folk music over there, where it's sort of like, I think people are really into bluegrass music, and when we and expect bluegrass music from American like traditional bands. So when we got over there, there were a lot of people I think who were like, "Wait, this isn't bluegrass." Like I was expecting bluegrass,
and
right?
Most people liked it, right? People would be like, "Oh, this is really we're really into it," but I think there was a very just a fixation on American bluegrass and American country culture. We experienced that.
Yeah, we were on this tour called the Bluegrass Jamboree, which maybe that's why they were expecting authentic bluegrass. Because, but it was us and two other bands, and people would kind of there would be like a few guys who would show up to every show in just like full cowboy duds. Just like
a
really
a wee bit alienating for a new person.
It was an interesting vibe, but overall the audience response was really great, and people were really really into it, and German people in general are super friendly.
David on Facebook writes, "They are a big reason why I retain hope amid the gloom."
Oh,
thank you,
dang.
David.
That's the goal. That's certainly the goal.
Thank
Thanks, David.
Yeah, and so Doug on Facebook, when we did our Facebook post for Main Calling, we said you guys are making it big in the folk scene, and and he says, "What does making it big in the folk scene mean to the band? The record's doing great, and your profile is rising. What does that practically mean?"
That's a good question.
I mean, honestly.
Also, if this is Doug Hacker, hi.
Honestly, like, the ultimate goal is butts in the seats. Just like, you know, people coming to our shows. Like, the live shows are really kind of the, financially, they're like the bread and butter of what we do. But it's also kind of, I think, for me at least, like, the whole point is being able to connect with audiences and meet people everywhere we go. And so, one thing that's been really great about this new album and the press and the attention that it's been getting is like we'll play in a town like Chicago where we've only played we've played like a house concert there before. So this is our first real show in Chicago, and we had a lot of people there who'd never seen us play before. And so yeah, that's one thing that's been really exciting about this tour is just kind of getting to like go out into new places and see mm-hmm. like, ooh, does anyone know who we are here? And yeah. then there's a pretty decent number of people who do know who we are. And so that's been really exciting.
We'll go to Mindy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Mindy. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Live the Wild.
Hi, Mindy.
It's only people we know are calling
it. Great.
I love this. Yep. I love
Maine.
Well,
it is Maine.
Yeah, exactly.
It is Maine, but the more you do what you're doing, the more people will know who you are.
That's true.
Live the Wilds, I've known since they were quite young, mm-hmm. and I work in the folk music business, and I have watched their careers grow. And I tell you, they are recognized in the folk business as up-and-coming stars.
Oh, so, thanks,
and I was on my way to go into Farmington tonight, but I can't make it. So thank you for being on where I can see and hear you.
Yes.
Even at a distance.
Yeah. And so great to hear from you, Mindy.
Work.
Thank you.
They are well-known in the business and in the public. So keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, you.
Mindy, thank you so much for calling. Heidi on Facebook says, this is so wonderful. This is what I just shared with this stream and into our Berklee alumni groups, Berklee College Music alumni and folk professionals on Maine Radio, sending love from Southern Maine. Wonderful to hear music on the show. Who do you all look up to? Who are your musical heroes?
Oh, man.
So many.
So yeah. many.
Jeez. For me, one major influence that I just keep coming back to all the time is Gillian Welch and Dave Rawlings. Mm-hmm. I am hugely influenced by their songwriting and their guitar playing, and their singing and their approach to harmony singing. I have been a crazed fan of theirs for so long, and I keep coming back to their music, and it's so deep, and I've learned so much from them. So yeah, that's a major one for me.
So that's Issa.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. is Issa.
Molly speaking. One that I always sort of come back to, at least in the folk realm, it's funny to sort of think about your broad influences and then your influences for the music that you make with the band that you're in currently.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
But someone who I love their whole trajectory and the way that their approach to folk music is The Band.
Mm.
Yeah. The Band. Just because they, everyone knows them as a folk rock band, you know, and they groove so hard. And I think some associations with folk music that we might have touched on a little bit is that it's like quiet acoustic music that you hear in your living room, you know, or in your community church, and to hear the other side of folk music, which is like rocking party music, sort of electrified and improvised and just all the things that I love about music in general, I feel like embodied by The Band. And so that's another influence
for
me when I'm, you know, thinking of writing for this band or mm-hmm. playing for
yeah,
this band, the future of this band, you know, mm-hmm. I'm just like, yes, that is also a possibility as a folk band.
Eleanor, what about you?
I guess I agree with both of Issa and Molly's influences as well. But I guess as a singer, I have always been really into Bonnie Raitt, and I'm always really inspired by her singing and her performing. And so she's definitely been an influence.
All right. Annie on Facebook says, love Lula Wiles. What do you guys think about the state of diversity in folk music, especially in the mainstream? Do you see the genre diversifying at all, especially along the lines of race and gender?
That's a really great question.
Yes, I do.
We all would agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to an extent, it has always been diverse, but the diversity has been hidden or explicitly hidden by record companies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, marketing folk music by Black people as race music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, folk music by white people as folk music.
As folk,
right?
Hillbilly music,
yep. Right? And so there is a lot that has been unseen in the past. And I think mm-hmm. now, especially with racial dynamics hopefully changing, at least, you know, things are changing as much as they're not changing. They're also changing
mm-hmm.
in terms of race and diversity and representation in this country, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There's still a long way to go. But, you know, there are a lot of really amazing folk artists who, you know, in different times in America wouldn't see any
press or popularity, attention. And there are, I mean, even Smithsonian Folkways and other labels, like that is a mission, I think, that people are taking on and being really public about now, is supporting diversity.
Yeah,
and
is saying, oh, American folk music and obviously, you know, American roots music too, jazz and blues and country blues. And it's like American folk music is not just white. And I think that's a mainstream concept of some kind, like, that people
illusion.
Think illusion, so many, illusion
yeah
exactly.
Like, there are so many people who just think that the banjo is like a white man's instrument when it came from Africa. And we were featured in this like paste list of like 10 new folk artists that you need to know in 2019, which is like, great, hooray, thanks paste. But the thing that was so notable to me about that list, I remember looking at it, is it was mostly women, mm-hmm. and it contained a lot of women of color, like Rhiannon Giddens and Kaya Cater. Mm-hmm. Kaya is like an amazing friend and label mate of ours. And it was just really cool to see this list. Like, this list didn't say diversity on it. It didn't say women mm-hmm. on it. It was just,
it wasn't like
you're
the 10 ladies of folk that you need to know of.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
which
just
often
like,
happens.
These are some great musicians, and a lot of them are women, and a lot of them are people of color.
Mm-hmm. I will just jump back in real quick to say that said, there's still a long way to go, and I think something that keeps marginalized people from folk music and from pursuing careers like this one, where you're interacting with like a lot of people all the time, mm-hmm. is just culturally alienating stuff. Like, you know, playing in like small rural white towns. Like, no, we can do that maybe because we're generally a white passing band, mm-hmm. you know. But like, there are a lot of people who are uncomfortable being the only non-white person in the room, and that is a lot of the folk audience across the country. And that's something. Or like for me, going to Nashville and half the people in the audience are wearing leather fringe and appropriative native clothing, I'm mm-hmm. like, well, that's alienating, and it doesn't make me necessarily as a woman of color, a native woman, want to play in Nashville, mm-hmm. you know. And so again, we're getting places, and there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
If you'd like to join the conversation, and if you have something to say to Lula Wiles, if you have a question for them, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We're on Facebook Live, and when we come back from the break, we're going to have another song. Stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com. We call it a celebration of public radio when we take a few minutes in and around all the programs you count on here on Maine Public Radio to remind you that listener support does two things. One, it allows public radio to do what it does and be what it is, the service you count on and trust. And two, it allows and enables public radio to continue being public radio into the months ahead. These are important times, and more listeners than ever are counting on this service to cover the news of the day. Are you doing your financial part? On Tuesday, we kick off our Let's Grow Together Spring Friendraiser for that important financial support, and we hope to hear from you. You can contribute right now at mainpublic.org, and your contribution will count towards the goals. Coming up today at 2 is Safe Space Radio, Can We Talk? Portland, Maine psychiatrist Dr. Anne Hallward hosts 4 Safe Space Radio programs we are airing during May, which is Mental Health Awareness Month. Today's topic is apologies.
And again, Lula Wiles.
'Cause you're cheering at the sound. sweep me in its undertow. I'll lean into the wind and let it blow. And letting myself miss you still feels better than somehow letting go. So tell my mama that I'm coming on home with a suitcase full of dirty clothes to forget for what I would have always known. Oh, hey there, honey, would you write me a letter? I don't mean it, but I might feel better. I knew you wouldn't last forever.
Wow. That was Lula Wiles, Issa Burke, Eleanor Buckland, and Molly Obomsawin. And performing tonight in Farmington. And you guys have a few concerts coming up in Maine, not just Farmington, right? Yeah, you're playing at Stone Martin Arts a little bit later in the season.
So I think it's sometime in June. Okay. And I believe.
Yeah.
We'll be at Stone Mountain Arts Center on June 21st with Issa's parents.
Oh, fun.
So co-bill with them.
Yep. And then in August, we're playing actually in Portland at the Port City Music Hall.
Yeah.
Which we're so excited about at the end of August.
Yeah, so right here in Portland. So go to lulawiles.com/shows to find out where we'll be. And if you're listening not in Maine, we're all over the place these days. So check it out.
So I've noticed you all sang three songs for us, and each of you took the lead on a different song. You all three sing. Do all three of you write as well?
Yeah, we do.
It's kind of our thing.
Yeah, so generally whoever is singing lead on the song wrote the song, but it's all credited on all our records and everything. And I think songwriting, not just performing and singing together and playing folk music, you know, but I think the thing that another influence of our band, right, and like the reason we really love being in a band together is, I think, that we all write. And so we've there's a lot of music coming together here, and it's not just one person's voice, but we all get to kind of share our voice. And we've been loving co-writing lately, so about half of the songs on the new record, What Will We Do, were co-written in some capacity, and definitely with our future records.
Yeah, we'll only more of that.
More of that. Exactly.
We'll go to Ellen, who's calling from Peaks Island. Hi, Ellen. Go ahead.
Hey, girls. Awesome work. I just wanted to give you a little story. You're bridging the musical divide of the teenagers in my house. And that super fun. So
that makes us so
happy. Our 17-year-old Lucia, who's not the who we, quote, consider to be the musician in the family, brought our awareness to you. And she was like, hey, they're playing a club passing in Boston. Can we go? And I said, sure, we'll go.
Oh, my goodness.
And I went to buy tickets, and that night you were playing at One Longfellow. So I was like, sweet, we're all going. And we went to your show, and it was brilliant.
Oh, so
Lucia was familiar with your music, but
thanks,
Simone,
Lucia.
And I, who are, like, waist deep in the whole Maine fiddle scene, were just so pleased to be brought to your music by Lucia. And now, you know, we have the CD in the car on autoplay all the time. Everybody's singing, everybody playing.
Oh my God,
this is incredible.
Yeah.
So
you guys
sweet.
Are really terrific. And now it's just been really fun to watch everybody else kind of get the light bulb going off for people, and you celebrating singing and songwriting and doing that together as women out on the road. And just wish you all the success.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Ellen.
You so much. Yeah, it's really
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Good work.
Ellen, thanks so much for calling in. I'm going to go to a Facebook post from Amesel, and I know this is Amesel Ponte. There's a terrific social media account called Book More Women. It essentially calls out the huge disparity with many festivals and that they book significantly more acts than I think she meant male acts than female acts. Has this been an issue at all in the folk music festival scene? And P.S. Hi, Lula Files. I'm a fan.
Oh, that's nice. I think it's still an issue in the folk world, but less of an issue than in, I think, the music world at large.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, the Bonnaroos, the Coachellas, I think. But I do. We follow that account. I love that Instagram account. And they call out a lot of folk music festivals, too. Awesome. And or roots music festivals or bluegrass festivals. And it is still
it's a problem. It's definitely a problem. And I think that it's also deeper than that, and just the way that music pedagogy or, you know, kids are brought to music and encouraged to play music. And I think that's a very gendered, there's a very gendered process that goes on, right?
Yeah.
Women are often, young girls, I guess, are often less encouraged to be soloists or like instrumentalists and side musicians. And I think there's just less of a system in place where they, where mentors will come to them and be like, oh, I notice you have a spark for the fiddle or the electric guitar or the bass. And I was really lucky. And Issa, you know, we all had musical parents so that we were a leg up in that way. But, you know, the way that kids are brought to music and their experience going growing up and learning music and having mentorship is different than for women, young women and men. And that leads to the misrepresentation at festivals.
Totally.
Yeah, and so I think having the work that festivals do to, you know, put more women on stage and put more people of color on stage in front of everyone, it that helps so much, right? The representation. So kids, so young people going to those festivals, you know, finally can kind of look up there and say, oh my gosh, Issa Burke plays electric guitar. Like, I'm a 12-year-old girl. Like, I've never seen a woman playing electric guitar on a stage right now.
I can do that.
Or until now. And it creates a space where those young women maybe see themselves.
Yeah, and I think that, like, it's great to look at how many women are booked at your festival, but I think something that I think about a lot is it's also really important to look at, like, where are women represented in music? Because, like, if you're just looking at, like, woman-fronted bands where it's a woman songwriter backed by a band of six men, that doesn't really move the needle as much as seeing a woman drummer on stage. Because how many times, how many women songwriters are there in the world? There's so many, but not as many women drummers. Or women bass players or women music producers. So I think there's also combating the thing that Molly talked about where certain instruments or certain musical roles are seen in gendered ways. We got to dismantle that, too.
We have so many positive emails and Facebook posts. I'll read this one from Kevin. I first heard of Lula Wiles while attending Maine Fiddle Camp.
Yes.
I am an adult beginner fiddler.
Yes!
And was lucky enough to sit in on a lesson or two. They are amazing storytellers, able to transport you to the place they are singing about. I especially like their song, Lay Me Down. It gives me goosebumps every time I hear it. So that's from Kevin.
Thanks, Cute. Kevin.
And we'll go to Brackett, who's calling from Denmark. Hi, Brackett. Go ahead.
Hello, how's everybody?
Hello.
Great, great.
How are you?
I met the ladies at the Denmark Arts Center.
Oh, yes, of course.
Sound, and I play with Andy Buckland.
Hi. Oh, man,
yeah,
that's
nice
my dad.
To hear from you.
Glad you're doing well.
Thank
Fantastic.
You,
Fantastic. I think the album was in the can when I saw you.
Mm-hmm.
But congratulations. I just want to say I have two daughters, 11 and 13, and they're multi-instrumentalists.
Heck yeah.
Yes.
My rule is there are no rules. Play whatever you want.
Excellent. Yes.
They loved your show, and it was fantastic. And congratulations, and keep up the good work.
Thanks so
Thank
much.
So
Thanks,
much.
Brackett.
Thanks, Brackett, for calling in. Let's see here. This is from Martin on Facebook. I think it's Marty Groman. Something fun. I served in the legislature with Eleanor's dad, Andy Buckland. He's a great musician, too. And your dad wrote back, and you can catch them live in Farmington tonight.
Yes. So, all the parents on our street team of our for our show.
Yeah, seriously.
Our Facebook street team.
And Michael on Facebook says Philly Folk Festival has committed to 50% female performers.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's I do great. Remember that.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Okay, and then I'll end with this. We're almost out of town, but Heidi on Facebook grew up in the Down East neighborhood of Noel Paul Stuckey and was all blessed right. to have heard him and County Down and Gordon Bach. And Heidi just wants to know if, you know, any of the wonderful artists here in Maine have influenced your music.
Absolutely. I'm going to give kind of a local shout out to the Galler family.
Oh,
so
yes.
Ellen Galler and John Galler and their daughters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when I started going to Maine Fiddle Camp, their daughters are a little bit older than me. And so I always looked up to them so much because family band in Maine. I was just so inspired by all of them. So I'll mm-hmm. say those. Folks.
Lissa Schneckenberger, oh, for yes. sure. She was she was the teacher of the fiddle class where Ellie and I first became friends at Maine mm-hmm. Fiddle Camp. And she was one of my early fiddle heroes. She's from Maine.
Doug Protzik, who runs Maine Fiddle Camp.
Totally.
And is a killing ragtime pianist among so yeah. many other styles. But yeah. I remember being encouraged to play jazz by him at Fiddle Camp, of all places. So
yeah. That's great. Wow. Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for being here today. I know you're wiped out from your tour, but our audience just loved it. This is Lula Wiles, Molly Obomsawin. Am I pronouncing it right?
Obomsawin. Very close.
Obomsawin. So I'm sorry about that. Eleanor Buckland and Issa Burke. Their new album is What Will We Do? Lucy Suchek ran the board. Isaac Merson took your calls. We had help from John Keimel, Nick Woodward, and Nick Godfrey. The show is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. And as we go out, we're going to hear a song from the new album. This is The Pain of Loving, recorded live in Berlin.